Holy Wit!
What did you just say?
Holy Wit, a podcast for warriors in training. Watching football today, watching the Tampa Bay walk all over Detroit, kind of made me think about what 2020 is like. From the Detroit Lions perspective, they had no answer to the offense. They had zero defense. And as a result, Tampa Bay walked all over them. Touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. I mean, Brady could have closed his eyes, thrown the ball, and it would have resulted in a touchdown because Detroit did not know how to defend it. It's like their guys were on the field and they had no idea what they were doing out there. What's this uniform for? I know I'm wearing it, but I don't know how to represent it. And that's how I feel 2020 has been. I think we've been the Detroit Lions as a society fighting this pandemic that we are told exists. And we've got no defense for it. What's our defense in times of trial? Where's our go-to? Where's our go-to?
Well, we have a defense.
Well, so do the Detroit Lions, but they don't know how to execute it.
Right. And that's more about how it is. It becomes, and if hindsight is 2020, then, to look back at 2020 is a great learning for a lot of people, a lot of us.
Right. So what happened to your defense in 2020 as we look back in hindsight?
Well, our defense, I believe, my belief in that is faith. Our defense is faith in the midst of trial. Faith in the midst of what seems to be no hope. And as we saw in 2020 with the pandemic that came in, the response to it was not hope. It was not faith. It was, in fact, fear.
Fear. Fear of what? Is it fear of getting sick?
I think for a lot of people, it goes down to fear of death.
That's what it comes down to.
Right in the
because
end.
What's the worst thing that would happen if you caught this virus?
Well, worst case, you die, and then so you're then, hanging out with Jesus.
Well, some people.
well, not everybody.
But it uncovers, it exposes the weakness in your defense.
Right. It really tests to see where your faith is.
So what happened to faith in 2020?
Well, they get revealed.
We're not talking about everybody.
No.
But for the majority, I would say.
For those who say they follow Christ.
Those who just show up on Sunday mornings, what happened to them this year?
Well, I think a lot of people, I think that faith actually revealed where their faith lies. Where their faith was more in the institution. Their faith was more in the religion, not relationship. Their faith was more in what they could control or not control. Their faith was more in their idols. And that idol is, pick your idol, right?
So would you say that the church, going to a physical church building, was an idol?
Sure it is.
How so?
Because it becomes a ritual, it becomes ritualistic. And so we put that, when we put that, being able to go to a building and all that, and our traditions, let's call it that, becomes our idol, because when we no longer can do it, then it becomes now what?
Right, so we know how to go to church. We know how to do that. But what I hear you saying is that we don't know much of anything else.
Well, we know our rituals. So when the normal, right, everybody's saying, I can't wait to get back to normal.
Or here's the new normal.
Right. When we look for normality, that can be an idol. Because it's my traditions, it's my ways, it's my worship, it's my building, it's my way of doing things has now been disrupted at a large scale, then my faith goes with that.
And so now what?
Right. What do I do now? Mm-hmm. I'm stuck at home. I'm isolated. Where's God in this? Why me, God? Why? That's because that can be sometimes our mentality and our attitude. Why, God, why do you allow bad things to happen to good people?
But who's to say you're good? I mean, that's a different conversation.
Yeah. But that's a lot of the thinking, mm-hmm. right? I've done all these things right, so it's works-based. I've done all these things right. Why am I the one that's suffering? Mm-hmm. Because we have this thinking that because we become a Christian, we follow Christ, we're not going to suffer.
Yeah, we've missed the crucifixion. If that's our thinking.
Right, but we've missed the crucifixion. We've also become comfortable in our Western mm-hmm. society of things.
And so going back to what was lacking in 2020? What was taken away was our ability to gather together.
Right.
And so what happens to people? What have you seen happen to people when suddenly you can't go or you have to go online and register days beforehand going to get your name in for a service only to find out that the service that you go to is full. And now you're like, all right, what happens?
Well, I think two different things happen. First, we become indignant or we become, we move into a victim mentality. And I think part of that is that our sense of entitlement is taken away. We're, you know, we almost have this, we're entitled to these things.
But it is a right on the government level, and it's the government taking it away on one hand.
Well, we have freedoms mm-hmm. that we need to enforce ourselves, right? We need to push for, that we're fought for, that we don't have to give up, just easily give up on, and just fall prey to whatever the government is dictating. But at the same time, I think it's revealing where our false beliefs have been. Mm-hmm. And that false belief in is I have a right to gather. We do. But why does that have to be a gathering in a large group in a large space?
Right.
Where is that right? Where we have the right to gather. But if you actually look at the first church,
the biblical example
of those who lived, how did they gather in large groups?
Well, you had large crowds following Jesus, but when we talk about the Acts church,
yeah,
they were all home churches,
right? Yeah, they were families, spiritual families doing life together.
But before we get to there, when we talk about how has our faith been impacted in 2020, we don't know how. Many don't know how to gather. How do we do home church? How do we gather in smaller groups? Mm-hmm. How can we worship God outside of a large stage with lighting and all this stimulus to entertain us? Mm-hmm. We can't bring that into our home. We can't bring the worship team here and have the sound tech team and the video tech team and all that goes on in a mega church service. Mm-hmm. And so when we're left to our own vices, we put our hands up and go, I don't know how to do it, so I'm not going to do anything at all.
Right. Or I'll sit in my underwear drinking hot chocolate and watching it on TV.
Right.
Which becomes just another form of entertainment.
Right.
It becomes entertain me.
And that's what I want to get to, because you've spoken about this a lot this year that you guys wouldn't know of, but you have spoken a lot this year and that exposes where our faith is at. We've put our faith in being entertained over cultivating an intimate relationship with our Lord.
Right. Yeah. And in that it becomes, and that's what I'm saying, that's where it reveals the unbelief. So do I truly believe God is good? Right? Because if these things are taken away, is God really good? Is he still good when all these things have been taken away from me?
Not only my ability or my right to worship publicly, but my job, relationships,
everything.
School.
Yeah. Connections, all that stuff.
It seems like the only thing you can do these days is take your dog for a walk.
Yeah. Right. There's been that aspect. And there's been some good things. People are
sure.
walking more.
Yep.
They're spending time with family more. Certain things have been disrupted, which is a good thing. But, it reveals unbelief. Is God great? the omniscience, the omnipresence, the sovereignty of God doesn't change. But my belief of God is great, because if God is great, what is greater? The pandemic, COVID, or God?
God.
Right. But we say that. People will say that. Oh, yeah, it's God.
That's a Sunday school answer.
But, right. That's a Sunday school answer. But do you truly believe that? Because if you truly believe that God is great and he is bigger than all of this, how does that play out in how you think,
mm-hmm.
believe,
yep.
and act? Because that's how it rolls, right? How I believe ultimately portrays on how I act to it.
But the good thing this year is we've said it right from the beginning. Everything started to fall apart. We took notice of it towards the end of February.
Mm-hmm.
When one Sunday we noticed that the servers for communion were wearing gloves and masks.
Right, and handing out stuff with tongs.
And handing out your communion bread with tongs, right. And just totally confused. What is going on here? What is this all about? Isn't this over the top? Like, if God is who he says he is, why do we need to have such protocol?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying being reckless. I'm just saying at that time it was a lack of understanding of what exactly is going on here.
Right.
And just saw a lot of fear, yep. more than faith.
Yep.
But at that time, both of us said with a chuckle, God is scattering his church, and it's a good thing that he's scattering his church. Many don't see it that way because they're left going, now what? I have no idea. I haven't been equipped for this. I have not trained for this.
Right.
Because I've got lulled into the tradition and the schedule or the routine of going to church on Sunday morning, sit there half awake throughout the service, and then on to the next thing.
Right.
And it really hasn't impacted your life. And now God has scattered his church,
mm-hmm.
which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But now we have an awesome opportunity to learn how to be a scattered church.
Right.
And what does that involve?
Well, as God, like you say, as God has used this disruption to push people out of their comfort zones, and out of their religious practices, it causes us to pause and say, okay, well, if this is where I'm at, if I'm, where it's stuck at home per se, or I'm stuck in my neighborhood, then how can I start to live incarnationally?
What does that mean?
Incarnationally,
I mean, it's
means
a fancy word.
Sure. So right, yeah. But it means to live from within. God, he became incarnate. Right, Jesus became man.
Okay, but you're using the word to define the word.
I know, but hear me, right? But I'm saying, he's the example, right? He became incarnate. He became man to live as we live, to experience as we live. So he lived with us.
Right.
And so we use that term Emmanuel now at Christmas time, God with us. And so if he lived with us as us, then it becomes, how do we live the same way in our neighborhoods?
Right.
How do we live as Jesus in our neighborhoods to our neighbors who mm-hmm. may not even have an understanding of God,
mm-hmm.
or an understanding of Jesus. And it becomes, how can we reach out to them? How can we be what Jesus was?
But it's not only reaching the lost, it's also encouraging the saved.
Right, it's doing life together.
Right.
It's gathering together.
Right. Like, let's not just focus on the lost. There's a lot of hurting people out there that have been scattered with the church.
Sure.
That are going, where are these relationships?
Yeah, because they were reliant on those, and some people have lost their churches, period. Like, some churches have just
completely shut down
because they can no longer financially sustain
right
their operations.
And so all this is segueing into what we want to talk about.
Right. So if we today. Actually look back at, have that 2020 hindsight, looking forward into 2021,
mm-hmm.
this is the greatest opportunity that the modern church has had in any time, in the last few decades, to reset, to, versus this pivot,
mm-hmm.
to change the way we operate.
Right.
And start to be those people that are living together as family, Christians gathering
mm-hmm.
together in small groups, and through that then reaching out to those who are around them.
Right.
And so I think we can actually go back. It's like a reset. it's a large reset for the church to go back and say, okay, well, and it's interesting because you look at the church, we've been part of churches, you know, through the years that have, you know, said, yes, you have a large group of people gathering, but, you know, the church has tried the small groups. And, you know, the small group model was really, and I heard, I think it was Cesar Kalinowski who mentioned this one time, that, and I think he was talking about somebody else as well, that the small groups were like the flypaper of the church. They're a way of keeping people attached.
Right.
Because you can't have close relationships in the larger community.
No.
You can't do it on, like, Sunday.
No.
You go in, like you said, you sit down, you stare at the back of somebody's head for 2.5 hours or 2 hours, and you stand up, sit, you know, all that stuff.
And sometimes you can come and go without anybody saying anything to you.
Right.
You can be completely invisible and anonymous.
Right. You can be incognito. And so in that it becomes, I think in that there's no, discipleship doesn't happen then.
It can't.
Because discipleship happens in the smaller settings.
Right.
And I'm talking smaller, everywhere from 1-to-1 up to a handful of people.
Right.
Because then things can be learned.
And modeled
and practiced.
Yep.
Where they're
and
not,
talked about.
Right, right.
A lot of times we hear from the pulpit, and there's a lot of fantastic messages that happen from the pulpit. I'm not coming down on preachers and pastors at all. I'm saying it comes down to the now what. We can hear all the greatest sermons from C.S. Lewis on to this day, you know, pick a pastor kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Or pick a Bible teacher or somebody that you listen to. For you, it's Caesar. For me, it's Beth Moore.
Yeah.
You know, for us, it's Mark Gunger kind of thing. Like, pick these well-known pillars of the faith, if you want to call them that. You don't have that back and forth with them. And so you hear them tell you they're now what.
Right.
But you can sit there with your hands in the air saying, okay, that's fine. Okay, I'm going to try to do it. But if it doesn't look like they're explaining it, I'm going to give up because it's obviously not working. And I don't know what I'm missing because I don't have that somebody to talk to about it and to sharpen each other on that.
Right.
And that's what you're saying. That's where discipleship has been failing.
Mm-hmm.
Not just this year, but for decades previous, prior to this year.
Yeah. Because we look at it and say, what's discipleship been in the church?
Well, we use the word, so we'll cap something, we'll cap a program with that word and call it discipleship.
Right.
And you know this because you were the pastor of Healing and Discipleship.
Right.
And you were trying to raise people up by doing that one-on-one and often told that you can't do the one-on-ones because there's too many people to invest one-on-one.
Right.
But you followed Jesus' model by taking a handful of guys and raising them up. And as a result, these guys are growing. Like, it's fantastic. It's awesome to see where they were and look at them now.
Yes.
These guys are growing. They're rising. And it's because the time invested in the one-on-one and not pushing them aside, saying, okay, you can check this off as program complete. It's not complete because discipleship is an ongoing. There's a beginning, but there's no end.
Right. Yeah. And there's multiplication. We have to, you know, because too often we, in our Western world, we measure everything by numbers.
Right.
Large numbers. And this is success when we have large numbers.
Large dollars or large people.
Number, yeah.
Yeah.
And the reality is,
not large people like big people. Not many people.
but in that, we have to look at and say, you know, look at how Jesus did it. He picked 12.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those 12, he had three that he really, really invested heavily into. Like, they were up with him up on the mountain when, during the Transfiguration, like, they got even closer look at certain things.
And they still continue to argue.
Sure. They weren't perfect. But Jesus, he invested in those, and he exampled to them. And then there was the greater number, the 72 that he sent out. And there were larger numbers than even that were discipled.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus really invested in the 12, knowing that they would in turn take that and do what they were shown to do by Jesus. And Jesus wasn't concerned about getting it done in a certain amount of time. And again, we want large results. We want huge.
We want drive-through results.
Right. But we want huge results in drive-through speed.
Mm-hmm.
In app download speed. And that's our culture nowadays. We want things instantly.
Yeah.
And we have to understand that this stuff is slow. And it takes time. A single relationship, you know, moving from somebody who's not yet believing to believing, not saying the prayer, don't, right, not doing that quote-unquote prayer.
But moving from unbelief
to belief. It takes time, and it could take years of having conversations, hanging out. So if that's the case, then, hey, let's get started now. And it's those people who are around us, not across the world or nowhere else. It's those that God has put in our lives here and now that he wants us to have and build a relationship with and then invest in and disciple. And I think that's part of the whole, that's something else that this disruption has caused us to do, is now we no longer have those big numbers and big things that we're focused on. Now it becomes really, okay, I only have those who I am closely connected with.
But there's a scattering, there's also the shrinking, and it's a good thing, because these large places that we're used to going to gather are continually shrinking. And it's a good thing, because if you shrink down to a small nucleus of people and you keep multiplying them, you know, like Francis Chan talks in his book, Letters to the Church, he talks about every time they hit 21 in their small group, they split and grow. So they're continually, they hit 20, they go over 20, sorry, yeah. They split and grow. And 20 is their mark. So no gathering is more than 20 people.
Right.
And the beauty in that, and it's going to take a change in mindset. It's going to take imagination. It's definitely going to take leaning on God to give you direction in how to do it. Everybody gets discipled.
Yeah.
And when you tithe, every single dollar goes to being generous.
Yes.
Not one penny goes in the pocket of somebody for a salary, because everybody works. So they don't need the tithe to support them. So what a fantastic model that is. When you think in Acts, when they said everybody pooled all their possessions together and they grew.
Yeah.
They pooled. Nobody claimed to have a right to anything. And I think that also includes, nobody said that they had a right to the tithe.
Right.
To support them, to support their family. That every dollar given was funneled through to those in need.
Yep. And the apostles were then also taken care of, because their job was to teach.
Right.
Yeah, and disciple.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So in that, the hurdle that we have to get over is, if I tithe in a home church setting that's not connected to any mega church or any big church or any big denomination, but if I start organically and live, as you say,
incarnationally,
the mindset that is cultivated is, it doesn't matter if you get a tax receipt at the end of the day for the amount of money that you've given.
Right.
Because as a group, you are deciding that that money given, you pool it together, and then you decide where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
It has to go out. It cannot stay in. It has to go out. So whether you're giving to the homeless, you're helping out a family in need, some other organization, whatever you decide that you're going to support as a home church, that's where all of your giving goes to.
Yeah.
In my mind, that is fantastic. I love that idea. The reason why we give to one organization over the other in our own personal, because the one that we don't support, their overhead is 80% of their donations.
Right.
And we give to the other one is because it's a mirror effect. Their overhead is 20%. So I like the idea of 80%, more than 20%, going to those that they're saying that they help, those people in need, those children and families in need. But I am so on board with 100% of whatever that God gives us to flow through to them is going to meet the need 100%.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I also get excited that everybody gets discipled. So there's that 100% again. And 100% to me, as an ex-accountant, means complete.
Right.
You're right on target mm-hmm. when you're working at 100%. I'm not talking about perfection. I'm talking about completeness. And it's different. Perfection is not complete. Complete's not perfection. But 100% of what you have, if you've got a dollar and that full dollar is going towards where it should, that's complete.
Yeah.
If you've got two people that you're discipling and they're growing and multiplying, that's complete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to pause there and we're going to come back next week, because I actually now want to talk next week about, as we look back today at 2020 and what's been going on, and just kind of analyze it a bit and said what's God up to. I want to, next time we're going to talk now about that. What does it look like? How do we live in that sense of community? How do we live in that way where we're giving 100%? How do we live in that way that we're discipling and multiplying?
And being discipled.
So we're going to talk about that next time when you join us on the podcast.